Welcome to Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley here today. 2 days before the start of spring drills, so on Friday we will have an opportunity to speak with Brian Kelly. We've been looking forward to this, the start of this, Tim. 2 months of speculation about where the 2019 Notre Dame football team is headed, with eight guys at the combine and a ninth, Sam Mustipher, gone from last year's team. There's a lot to replace, but a lot of good football players coming back as well.
Seems like I started some spring previews about a month ago. May have to recalibrate that next year because this one, it's the earliest start I can remember, March 1st, technically March 2nd,
I guess. Well, you know, a lot of times the spring game has been on the last weekend of April, and now it's been pushed up to April 13th. What they want to do is, they basically have spring practice starts and it ends 6 weeks later, approximately.
They get a good break for real spring
break. They get a break for spring break. It also gives them an opportunity to spread the practices out and get all that meeting time in between. I get it why they do it. It used to be, I wrote about it this morning on Thursday Thoughts, there used to be 25 spring practices all open to the media, which was a pretty incredible opportunity. It's no wonder that we had such great insight and that I'm still in contact with a lot of the players they used to cover because you were around so much that they had an opportunity to get to know you a little bit.
The 9 open practices, though, including the Blue Gold game, is great for us this year. It's great for subscribers because you get practice reports, and 8 of them are full viewing.
That's
real. Really,
it's incredible. I want to commend Notre Dame. Thank Notre Dame for that opportunity. I don't know what went into that decision, but we will take it.
The one we don't need to be full is the first one because we're not in pads anyway. So it's
that's
perfect.
True.
That's
the
ideal way to set it up. And there's been quite a few things for, I don't want to say the lower rung players because you don't even have the freshman in you, but there's been signs in the past of when Sam Mustipher was coming up. We watched him learn to snap in spring practice, mm-hmm. where his redshirt freshman year, you're like, this is going to be a struggle. And he's a 3-year starter, but that is, you kind of see the process going. And I really want to bring this up. I did a little spring primer that'll be on the site later today. Last year, you don't want to jump too much into the first practice report. Now, by the time you get going, you really start to see some movement, see guys making moves up the depth chart. But there's a feeling out process at the beginning. Because last year, first spring practice report.
Yeah, relay some of this information that came out last year's first spring
report. Alohi Gilman was with the second unit. Jordan Genmark Heath was with the first at safety, playing linebacker. Josh Lugg, first unit, not Liam Eikenberg. Michael Young was ahead of Chase Claypool. Tommy Kramer was at right tackle. Robert Hainsey was at left tackle. Adi Ogundeji was third team. He became a quality second string football player. DJ Morgan, who didn't play at all, was at second string linebacker. 3 guys in the top in the 2D transferred by the end of the semester. So a lot of stuff will happen.
It'll change. And that's why, I put out like my last pre-spring impressions today. That's all going to change here in the next.
Yeah.
We're not going to get as much access right away. And then they have the week off, which we'll get into our podcast schedule. We'll go 2 next week and then probably just 1 when they're off. But, we'll have an opportunity to see a lot more practices over, especially the last 11 practices. I believe 8 of them are open.
That's great.
Including the Blue Gold game.
They've actually started to form some of what
this should be really good for us and really good for our listeners and our readers. So, that'll start on Saturday. Brian Kelly tomorrow. People always ask, who in one of our questions in the second segment, who is it you want to see? I don't look at it like that as much as I do. Of all the young guys that didn't make an impact, didn't play last year, I want to be open-minded and watch them and see the progress they've made. If that means Ovi Ogufo is the one that steps forward, or Derek Allen, or George Takis, or whoever, it doesn't matter. Those are the guys that can make the biggest strides. And in some respects, the fact that they didn't get an opportunity or really didn't see the light of day in their first semester can kind of be beneficial for them. I mean, they know they have to work, or a guy like Jack Lamb, a guy that was injured and didn't get an opportunity. We've heard good things about Jafar Armstrong and how hard he's working. Not that he falls into that same category. He's more of an established player, or one that has played. But I don't go into it necessarily saying, okay, I want to see what that guy did. I want to be open-minded and see who steps forward, because when you're young and then now you've had another 2 months in the weight room with Matt Bayless, now you have an opportunity to make significant progress.
It's redshirt freshmen, even redshirt sophomores like Jeremiah Usu-Koromoa that we were high on a year ago. why not be hiring them again when they have kind of a career reset, a career reboot? Then, of course, you know, some of these guys do fall to the wayside. It's going to happen. There's been plenty of, I've said a few names in that opening segment of what we saw last year that obviously are not there anymore. But this is a fun spring because maybe last year was more fun because it looked like, boy, these guys are going to be really good because they have Jerry Tillery, Tavon Coney, and Drew Tranquil, and Julian Love back. But there will be some new blood this year. New blood doesn't necessarily mean 12-0, but it's fun for spring practice.
No, it will be. And we obviously, most of our questions are about the spring here in the second segment. So I did want to dip into the NFL Combine, which has begun this week. It'll start getting serious here late in the week. The times and the measurements and those things are all going to be very important. Last week we talked about Drew Tranquil wanting to run a 4.55. Very important for him. 8 guys for Notre Dame. One that's not there is Sam Mustipher. I had an opportunity to interview him last week. And obviously, you know, and Alex Barst told me this, that he was really bummed out and disappointed, and Sam confirmed that he was.
It's a weird combine snub for me for a guy that was the starting setter on a 12-0 team, 3-year starting setter. Whether he deserved to be an All-American or not, he made an All-American team. That just sounds like you could be invited to participate in the NFL Combine. And I remember Cody Riggs wasn't invited.
Right.
And I remember thinking, well, he's a good player not be invited, but you could see that a little bit. He hurt his foot. He might not have been healthy enough. His measurables weren't there. He was a kind of a one-year guy in the spotlight. It's weird to me that Mustipher's not there, but Mustipher will have pro day, obviously, with a lot of these other guys coming back to impress. And I understand that he's a one-position guy. It's just strange that at a large collection of talent that the starting center, 3-year starter from a playoff team isn't there.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, well, number one, he thinks he can be a guard, too. I'm not sure that that's accurate. Number two, I think the fact that there are 8 other Notre Dame players may have worked against them. You know, at some point, the people that make these decisions have to draw the line with a program or you know, at a position. I don't know that there are that many great established centers that are out there. It does speak to a lot of the critique that I guess we offered during the season of Sam Mustipher. I asked him, because there had been some speculation about him being banged up during the season. I don't think I put this in the story, but I asked him specifically about that, and he said no. There wasn't anything in particular, but he said, you know, he felt like his body work spoke for itself. But he moved on. He said, I can't dwell on what happened with the combine. All I can do is stay out here. He's in Anaheim. Stay out here and keep working and be ready for pro day, which is March 20th. 17 former Notre Dame players at pro day. I know you wrote that up. 3 of them.
Grad transfers,
but man, that's a bunch. We got a lot to observe on March 20th.
No quarterbacks, so if you're a quarterback hopeful in the future, they need someone to throw. Now they have to contact somebody. That's happened in the past, though. And they bring in a Central Michigan quarterback 1 year. I might be speaking on the college, but they brought in someone that had nothing to do with Notre Dame 1 year to throw because he was an NFL hopeful, so to speak, and he had no one to throw with or throw to.
Yeah, I wonder how I'll try to find out who might.
Well, I did ask. Okay. It's to be determined right now, technically. It's not just from us. It's to be determined, but they could bring in anyone that wants to do it. Like, Jimmy Clausen could come do it if he felt so inclined. For instance, if he's graduated, but if he were on campus a couple years, like he was a couple years ago, he could throw. Ian Book could do it, but it would count as a practice.
Really?
Yes. Any the quarterbacks would lose a practice.
Oh, wow.
So I'm guaranteeing you Ian Book and Phil Dracovic would love to do that.
Yeah.
Miss practice 14 or something. But that's,
Montgomery Van Gorder could be available to do it as well. I don't know if he's accurate enough. We'll find out who ultimately would do that. I mentioned the Mustipher interview. I also had an opportunity to speak with Mike McGlinchey, one of the greatest guys in a world, one of the great leaders at Notre Dame. He really was.
I thought of his name when you said your access back in the day, why you got to know them so well. There's about 4 guys a year who
McGlinchey is the exception.
McGlinchey's a guy like that. Zach Martin was like that. You just talk to him so much. He represents the university. Win or lose, they're out there talking. Drew Tranquil is another one that's out there.
Well, I think McGlinchey and Tranquil. I'm biased. When I went through my little health episode, McGlinchey and Tranquil were the two that reached out to me, which, you know, you remember that for the rest of your life, however long that rest of the life is, longer than I thought it might be at one point. But, you appreciate that. And that, you know, that's the kind of guy that Mike McGlinchey is. Had a great rookie year. The 49ers only went 4-12 But by all accounts, he had a really, really, really good rookie year. It was interesting to hear him talk about pass rushers. And, you know, he faced a battery of them early in the season, and his head was spinning a little bit. Also interesting to hear that during the 49ers-Bears game, that as he was coming by the Bears sideline, Stan actually gave him some advice about get out of your own head and start playing and stop worrying about getting beat.
That's great.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
So, you know, that was interesting. You had an opportunity. This is something we've been working on. It took us a while to get the story, or for you ultimately to get the story, but Armando Allen, former Notre Dame running back, is now the running backs coach for Autry Denson at Charleston Southern.
It's a Notre Dame public interest situation, I think, Armando Allen joining him. Allen was at Texas Southern for 3 years. So it's remarkable how they got together, because Autry Denson was coaching at South Florida for, without being flippant, about a month. He took the Notre Dame job after taking that.
I talked to him right after that,
yeah. He, Armando Allen, happened to be in Tampa with his fiance, looked up Autry Denson, really liked what Denson had to say about how he views football, and he views football as a Christian outreach. Armando Allen views it as a way to mentor young players. It's kind of a, I don't think Allen goes quite the same way as Denson does in that. Autry Denson said in the article, if you haven't read it, we are a Christian outreach program that plays football. And he believes that that will translate on the field. Armando Allen really just wanted to get into coaching because of two guys at Notre Dame. Mike Haywood was the guy who recruited him, of course, and his first running backs coach. And then Tony Alford, who he's close with to this day. So he just says that, you know, I knew I wanted to mentor kids. That's what helped me. And that's, those two are together now in Charleston Southern. They're looking forward to watching one game this year because they can watch the Monday night Notre Dame game with Louisville. Yeah.
Right.
And the best part with Armando, he was, you know, he's pretty late. I knew Armando from covering him.
Yeah.
And they both said their favorite moment of Notre Dame was off the field. I thought Denson's was really nice that his kids know Notre Dame beyond their dad.
That's cool.
Yeah, and then Armando's was, of course, just being a 17-year-old kid coming on campus with Clawson and Gray. But Alan, I asked Alan if his worst memory was in Ann Arbor by any chance, and he just lost it.
He knew exactly
what I was talking about. He said to this day it bothers him, and he's getting mad thinking about that overturned call where he did not step out of bounds.
Last thing is segment one, junior day, and not to get too deep in that. It was more of a 2021 type gathering for Notre Dame last weekend. But Tyler Buttner, the quarterback out of La Jolla, California, there was some speculation that he might verbally commit to Notre Dame. There is a film review in the can waiting for him to do that. He didn't do it. And he wants to visit Stanford before he does that. He hasn't received an offer from Stanford yet. I know there's some concern on Notre Dame's part because Tyler Buttner, who I really like, played his freshman year and then tore his ACL four plays into his sophomore season. So there's no, you know, legitimate sophomore film on him, but that's a very mature kid with good size, and he's a good athlete, and I think Notre Dame would do well with Tyler Buttner, a quarterback, in 2021.
Off topic, you must have a lot more Kill That Story film reviews, because my ones I always remember will be that summer prediction series has been going back a long time now. And in 2014, the day before they announced the Frozen Five situation, I had the Deveris Daniels will score 10 touchdowns to lead the team. Got to kill that. Kill that story. There's been a few of those. For
yeah,
me,
there
must have one.
There has.
One a month.
There's a few there. You know, and while I just did the film review on Braden McGregor, who I've seen him. It wasn't like I didn't know who he was, but it was, I thought I'd actually done a review on him, and I checked with Jack, and Jack's like, no, yeah. And so it's like, okay, I've got to get this on record. Well, I watched him on Monday, and that is a great football player. And he was listed as the 274th prospect by 24/7 Sports. And my reaction was, if you would have told me before I watched this film that, okay, you're about to watch a five-star guy, after I watched it, I would have said, okay, yeah, I get that. Well, long story short, and I don't think there's any connection here. I didn't talk to anybody at 24/7 Sports, but Braden McGregor was elevated to number 27 in the country, and I think he's worthy of that. The bad news is he's probably going to go to Michigan, but Notre Dame's in there fighting for him, and I think he's a real difference maker at defensive end. So Lance Taylor on the job recruiting running backs. They offered Kyle Edwards. Jutaan McClain was a guy that came in. He's kind of Chris Tyree light. If they don't get Chris Tyree, so they're going to make some inroads at running back coming up here with Lance Taylor. So we'll be back with segment two, questions from our readers, burning up the boards. Segment two, burning up the boards of Irish Illustrated Insider. We start with a question from @bman_2017. Following Missouri and Barry Odom's announcement about full media access during spring practices. What changes would you like to see Notre Dame make in that respect?
To be fair to both sides, I think there's three ways I would handle the practices. Spring, I think it can be as open and interview as many players you can get out there and interview as humanly possible. You don't have to interview the spokesman for the program in the spring like you do in the season. There's something to protect them from. Let them come out and talk. We can write stories about them all summer because of it. And I throw the assistant coaches into that mix as well because they're grown men. August, I think they handle it pretty well. You know, you are buckling down for a season. You have chosen captains and leaders. Those are the guys that are going to speak for your team. The only thing is they do it on media day too, so you can maybe kind of find a way to intersperse some of the guys that are challenging for roles. I know you can't put everybody out there because look, some freshmen are just all of a sudden getting buried and they don't want to go talk to the media. And I don't blame them for cutting off. I think they give us good access those first 2 weeks. It's like four or five open practices. I don't blame them for cutting it off once you hit two. They're prepping for Michigan. You really need to have the media sitting in there watching you do that anymore after two weeks. And I would do what coaches do, and I would close practices in the season.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, even if I were, I think maybe Missouri needs the attention to their program. I would never open all the practices in the spring. I think that's too much. I mean, I'm kind of in accordance with you on access to the players that time of year.
Kelly, early on, now this is the Cincinnati Central Michigan coming with him at the time. Remember, we interviewed on the field after the spring. That was spring. I think there might have been a little of that in August. Now, I totally understand. You got to button it up a little bit as it gets going. But I think April, they should get as many guys out there for their interviews. I think there's good stories for all of them if you get to talk to them. And then
without the pressure of answering questions about the season or upcoming opponent or something like that.
They did nothing wrong. They haven't not earned playing time. You're not asking a guy why he hasn't played in 2 years. You know, it seems like you could throw more out there. You got to get a little more careful if you're Notre Dame when you hit August.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I think by and large Notre Dame handles it really well. Would we like to have access to all of the assistants at one time throughout the spring? Yeah, but
and in the season, I've always felt that each assistant coming out even just once, it'd be great.
Yeah, I agree.
And you don't have to do it in a way that they're going to get bombarded by everybody. Of course, if you bring out like three assistants after week one, and there's 10 minutes, you got to spread out and get those assistants and get off. They used to be able to bring out coordinators and assistants.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, the way we understand it, Brian Kelly doesn't want all of his assistants speaking on behalf of the entire program during the spring or the year. That's fine. That's his prerogative. I think by and large, Notre Dame does a pretty good job of giving. I'm shocked at 8 full practices in the spring. Apparently,
it's
that's
the time to do it, though. It really
no, there's
is.
No,
it's
there
a great
is,
time to do it.
There is, but I'm surprised at it, and
I love the 4 to 5.
I appreciate
in August.
It.
Yeah, the 4 to 5 in August has changed. Like I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, I would say. It's probably after 2012. It's a great idea because they're open completely. You're not just watching 20 minutes of stretching and a drill, so it really helps a lot. And as I said, boy, if I was a coach, I wouldn't want media anywhere near my practices, at least the last week of August and all the way through the season.
Well, and I think they cut off like last 2 weeks, and we understand
that. They're prepping for the opener.
I think Mike Birch is the one that has pushed forward at Notre Dame to get the 4 open practices.
The 4 opens, for sure.
I'm usually giving him grief, so I want to give him props here because I really do appreciate the opportunity that we're going to have to watch them this spring. The fall's different. You're getting ready for the season, buttoning it up. I totally understand that. At Wusterhof, besides no injuries, spring ball will be considered a success if?
From a media point of view, if we have a sound, solid opinion from talking to the coordinators and watching all these practices on who the starting linebackers are, who the other starting corner will be if Sean Crawford's not back, and if there is a true number one running back. There's going to be a number one running back. I want the number one running back to be Jafar Armstrong, and it's not 1A and 1B.
No, I'm completely of the mindset that Jafar Armstrong's going to stand out this spring. There's no doubt that he's going to be the starting running back. That's my perspective on Jafar Armstrong as the the player and the person, the person that we know at least up to this point.
And I didn't include any of the freshmen like Lacey that are very important because they have miles to go still in the summer and August before they can be in that.
Well, position. I'm totally with you about the linebackers. To me, that's the biggest question. I addressed this in Thursday Thoughts. There's a lot of trepidation about the defensive tackles. There's only four that anybody feels comfortable with, and one of them is Jacob Lacey, the mid-year enrollee. I think those four are going to be fine. The question is, how do you find, you know, number five and number six that can give you quality reps every day in practice? I like that four, though. I think the competition between Tagovailoa Mosa and Jason Adamiola is going to – boy, that's a mouthful, those two guys back-to-back. I think the competition there is going to be really, really significant. Heinisch clearly is a starting nose, but I got a lot of confidence in Jacob Lacey. So when I look at those four – I don't see as much concern there as I do at linebacker, where to me it's a little bit more up in the air.
I completely agree, because I think if the four interior defensive linemen you mentioned are healthy, they're fine. The question there is what happens if they start getting beat up, obviously. You can't necessarily say if the linebackers stay healthy, they're fine. Right.
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of testing, trial and error at linebacker between now and the start of the season. I think Jordan Jenmarkeith is going to make himself known one way or another, whether that means Asmar Bilal struggling at Buck or Shane Simon struggling at Rover and they feel they need to move Bilal back there. Whatever. There's a myriad of different ways that can all shake out. And I think that's going to – I think that's the last question to be answered on the defensive side of the floor. Tariq Bracey, to me, is the other starting corner.
I have a question about that. In the spring, me too. I have a question about that, though. What if Noah Boykin is good enough that he doesn't have to be behind Troy Pride all the time? Like, that would be a goal for me for Noah Boykin, where you say, might they move – Noah Boykin away from Troy Pride so he could actually compete too.
Maybe him or Bracey could be a nickel.
Right. That's where you look at it and you don't just say, okay, he's behind Troy Pride because there's another, they need to have a corner.
Now, we all expect Kyle Hamilton when he comes in to make a push for that nickel spot at the very least. But that's a good point. And we've all been high on DJ Brown, what little that we've seen of him. But it's the defensive side of the ball are where most of the questions are. I mean, wide receiver, okay, Kevin Austin or Michael Young. Well, it's probably going to be, to some extent, both.
Yeah, I would think.
With the other two starters returning in Claypool and Fink. So, to me, there's not as much mystery there. To me, it's more, I want to see the third and fourth string tight ends and how they run around and how they can make a contribution.
Next from Way to Go K-Man, who makes yet another podcast. What player are you most excited to watch in the first spring practice?
This gets back to my point in segment one. I mean, I don't have one. If I said one, then I could say five others. I want to see the backup tight ends. I don't want to go into, okay, he's emerging. Whoever does, great.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, whoever that is, there's a lot of young players that we have not seen. And I want to see some of those young players emerge. I don't care who it is.
The most important thing in modern Notre Dame coverage by media, because you have to be an analyst along with a reporter, is don't look for yourself to be right.
Boy, that's huge. That's huge.
If
and
you
when
spend
you're wrong,
all the time looking for yourself to be right, you're watching the wrong thing.
Exactly. And when you're wrong, admit that you're wrong. I totally believe in that.
So who I want to be right about? No, I do want to see.
Well, I want to be right about Jafar Armstrong.
Yes, but, of course. He's an important guy to be right about. But Ade Ogundeji had a bit of a breakout effort in the Clemson game, to the point where if things would have just gone better everywhere else around him, we might be talking about him more. I want to see if he's taken the next step, because look, Khalid Kareem is an All-American candidate, but if Ogundeji can play, it helps out the nickel, because Kareem already moves inside.
Yes.
There's things you can do with these four guys if he's taking the next step.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think guys like, you know, when you, quote, pull for somebody, you want to see Josh Lugg emerge. We've talked about him.
Yeah, it's a third year.
Right. It's not, I don't care who does it, but that's a guy like, okay, it's time for him to make a move. Cole Kmet, he needs to become undoubtedly the number one. Not that he has competition for the number one spot, but he needs to play like the number one tight end, a guy that's a viable option anytime you want to throw a football.
And then Rover's fun to watch, because 2 years ago I was really excited about Jeremiah Wusu-Koromora. He's been injured. Last year I was really excited about Shane Simon, and now they're pitted against each other.
Yeah, so that's kind of a... And, you know, certainly Derek Ellen was highly rated. We all thought he was. You'd like to see him, you know, really step forward, but there isn't a starting spot available
back there.
And that's a good thing.
It'd be nice to see if you're just thinking, wow, that is a huge step by Derek Allen, because there are two starting spots available the following season.
Yeah, no doubt. At @Irish_GL, what do you think the impact of Lance Taylor will be this spring? Are there tangible differences he can make, or is it more of a feeling out process?
Yeah, I think on the field it's a feeling out process. The tangible difference is going to happen in recruiting
with Lance Taylor.
Autry Denson had no problems on the field with his players and getting running backs ready to play at Notre Dame. Now Taylor has Autry Denson's players to get ready to play at Notre Dame.
That's a good thing. I mean, from the standpoint of protecting the football and that players have emerged.
They are well-coached players, and then, of course, he's got some youth coming in. His biggest challenge is getting that third guy, because the third guy is going to play. The third guy meet matters at running back. You get in because the second guy gets hurt or the first guy gets hurt. There's no way the third guy doesn't get significant reps. I think there's been one season in Kelly's era where the third guy was irrelevant, and that was 2011 when it was Jonas Gray and Sierre Wood. They didn't really have a third. Well, Gray got hurt at the end of the year, and they had to move Theo. So at some point, you need a third guy.
And we're not mentioning Avery Davis often enough because
he could be the third guy.
He could be the third guy. I guess the thing that I want to see out of, Tony Jones Jr. is, and this is more probably Matt Bayless than Lance Taylor. I mean, you'd like to see him come out with a little bit more burst. Is 2 months in the weight room and conditioning enough to, you know, pick up a little bit more burst? He needs that in order to compete with Jafar Armstrong.
He has good hands. He knows what to do. I mean, he knows where to be in pass protection. He has really good hands on those wheel routes out of the backfield. I mean, the screen pass was the easiest play of his life against USC. It's the famous one. But the Vanderbilt game, the little hook routes against Wake Forest, he could make a difference as a complimentary running back. But you're right, a little bit quicker finishing off plays and get a little hungrier too. If Jafar Armstrong's the
and you'd like to think that will serve him well, because I mean Jafar Armstrong, well, he started the first couple games of the season, so I mean he already beat him out, and I mean we clearly can expect him, Jafar Armstrong, that is, to be at the top of the depth chart when spring opens.
On that note, though, when Jafar Armstrong was getting more time, Game 3, Tony Jones had his best game ever. Vanderbilt game, but he just didn't really completely
And actually, for whatever this is worth, he started that game. I don't remember exactly when they threw in the passes, but if that was the whole idea behind it. And then, having said all that, I mean, getting back to the question from Way to Go K-Man, I mean, there's Jameer Smith, there's Sibo Flemister, there's Kyron Williams, there's a lot to see in the offensive backfield.
I will say one thing about running backs. Our first write-up is the only one that won't matter because they're not wearing pads. So wait for the second practice report on that one.
True.
Jim_Booney_CRS. When Derek Allen committed, I recall Irish Illustrated, specifically Priester's film report, lauding him as a physical, mature safety with solid coverage abilities and a sky-high upside. The best secondary signing in years, with Alohi Gilman and Jalen Elliott locking down safety next year and Kyle Hamilton competing in 2020. Where do you see Allen fitting the defense?
I'm not sure right now. I mean, I don't know that there's an opening now. Of course, you come out in the spring and you come out in better shape with a little bit more zip. I think they're all looking for a better conditioned Derek Allen. I don't think that jumped out at me as much as it did. I know Samson in particular felt like he didn't, you know, he looked a little spongy, I guess. So these last 2 months probably have been as spongy. No, that's not good. Being called SpongeBob's, is not good. But, you know, I mean, as far as these last 2 months, if you had to rank the most important players as far as the last 2 months are concerned, Derek Allen would probably be right up there. He needs to make a move, especially with Kyle Hamilton coming in June.
I want to hear Brian Polian say, Derek Allen has really impressed me. And he's one of the guys I can build my run teams around, because Derek Allen didn't beat out Paul Mawala for special teams last year. So Derek Allen, to get on the field, be a really good special teams player and be the backup safety this year. And then you contend next year with Houston Griffith, Derek Allen, and Kyle Hamilton. That's three highly rated safeties going on. So you could get something out of it.
And I'll own that film review. Yeah, I mean, he was very impressive. Me and every other guy felt the same way about him.
I mean, Harrison Smith did not play as a freshman. It's okay to not play as a freshman as a safety, right? Harrison Smith very true. Did not play as a freshman.
Very true. So I did find it interesting, though, last year, I mean, when Terry Joseph comes in as a safeties coach, and all of a sudden we're not talking about how difficult it is. He's a quarterback of the defense, and those two guys just, you know, Elliott and Gilman just came out and played, and you never heard anything about how difficult it was to play safety.
We should point out that we see him fitting at safety, though. We don't see the Rover move that people talked about because of his little bit bigger frame. We see him slimming down and playing safety because that's what Notre Dame thinks of him.
That's where they want him to play. Yeah, they're not prepared to make that move right now. And that, you know, I mean, if I had a nickel for every guy that was a Rover candidate, you know,
yeah,
I mean, in recruiting, and then once
they
get there,
Ken Markeith over there, just be, no one's listening to me. There's no.
Yeah, at God 354-17482. I hope I got those numbers correct. What early enrollee will make the most impact this spring and or in the spring game?
Lacey.
Yeah, I mean,
we'll
that's
be writing about him the most.
I think that's kind of an easy first choice, right? And secondly, I would say Zeke Correll, although I'm not doing where everybody else is in terms of he's going to come out and beat Trevor Rulin out. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't necessarily think that isn't in Notre Dame's best interest. Trevor Rulin reminds me a lot of Mike Golic Jr., which a lot of people will say, oh, but I think that's pretty good because I always thought that Mike Golic Jr. played wide and he was a technician, and that's who Trevor Rulin is. He's had time from the torn pec to get a lot stronger. I think one of the least of Notre Dame's worries in terms of transition players that were lost is at center with Trevor Rulin.
I agree that Trevor Rulin will start the spring and end the spring as the starting center. I love Zeke Curl's future. Can't wait to watch him play. But I think 354-17482 wants to know if Kyron Williams can make a splash. Because he is he's a spring skill position player at a position that needs a third option.
So no doubt. When you talk about guys that you're looking, yes, he's one of the early entry guys. He's one of the young guys. I want to see for myself if he has that burst that Kyron Williams himself believes that he has.
I kind of want to see him. Yeah, it's hard to compare the two guys unless he's, well, we will after 16 hours of practice, but I want to see if he's as quick as Avery Davis looked last year. Just quick, sudden quickness. I don't mean he has to, as you talked about, that extra gear. I just want to see sudden short space quickness where you go, whoa, all right.
Yeah.
Even we saw that last year. It's controlled setting with Avery Davis, but there was a couple plays in, I don't think it was 7-on-7. I have to go back to the notes. I think it was an 11-on-11 scrimmage where he caught that crossing route and just took it to the house.
Yeah.
We're like, whoa, there, he does have it. He's still obviously
coming out of the backfield, there's only one Dexter Williams on that team last year.
That was good times.
Dip 98. Which is a bigger concern, Tim? Number one, replacing Miles Boykin's steadiness and production with Claypool Austin, two guys who haven't grown nearly with the same reliability, or two, replacing Dexter Williams with Jones/Armstrong, Smith, Flemister, Kyron Williams, a group of guys that are either unproven, less athletic, or injury prone.
For me, I never think replacing the receivers is as hard as other people do, I guess.
Yeah.
I think Claypool will mature into a quality 1A, 1B receiver.
Does he change? Does he move to the W?
Depends.
I think it depends on who else emerges.
Right, because Michael Young's an X. Kevin Austin's a W from last year,
right.
I should say. People do think of Michael Young as a backup to Fink, but he's not. He is mostly
outside.
At one point he was, but now it's Keys is the logical slot backup. Mine is running back. Dexter was a special player last year for Notre Dame. He changed games. He changed the Virginia Tech game. He in his worst game, he picked up 6 first downs against Pittsburgh when nobody did anything on offense.
Yeah.
He was the best offensive player on the team if you didn't choose Ian Book. He was just a difference maker. So I like Jafar Armstrong only 1% less than you as a player. I think he's going to have a really good year, but you need a couple guys like that.
Yeah.
I hate to bring up this team, but Alabama's running backs, it's not just one guy doing that out there.
Right.
You can wear people down. If Armstrong now still had Williams, that would be a dynamic 1-2 punch.
Yeah, no doubt. I think Armstrong's more explosive than a lot of people think. I don't think he's Dexter Williams explosive, but I think he's close to that. And I have always been impressed. How many times have we talked to Jafar Armstrong? Maybe 5.
Yeah, he's
I've always
so mature.
Been. Yeah, he's really mature. I've always been impressed with him, not only in terms of the ability to converse with, you know, with us,
But, some people might not care about that as much as we do.
Yeah, but,
it shows a sign, though.
It does. I mean, I think that also means his ability to communicate with his coaches, which is important as well. But I mean, just his determination and attitude towards practice and getting better and working hard. And we've gotten a lot of feedback about he's had a really, really good 2 months and is owning the position of number one running back.
I think to put a bow on this one, I just think some wide receivers will step up in this offense with Ian Book kind of running the show the way they do with Chip Long's offense with you can use two tight ends. I know Armstrong's going to step up, but you need more than Jafar Armstrong. I feel like some young receivers will step up.
I'm fairly confident Kevin Austin will do that. I'm more confident that Cole Kmet will do that.
How much would we be 100% confident if Austin had never been left home for games, you know, mildly suspended?
And if he had continued to play and done something beyond the Navy game when he had the big 38-yarder, I don't think Notre Dame is worried about Kevin Austin
being focused and committed.
Yeah, right. I mean, when you get left home 2 games, that's certainly a red flag.
He definitely wasn't focused enough last year, but this is a reboot for everybody coming in. You can't get left home 2 games in a row after playing every single game and take it as anything but something went wrong and you need to mature.
Right. And, you know, I mean, Keys and Lindsey, let's see if they're ready to take the next step. I think the more logical of the two to be ready to take a next step would be Lawrence Keys, based upon what we saw last August.
At TDISU19, what is your impression of 2020 commit Drew Pine and the rankings drop? Not that it matters, but it seems many national scouts are falling off the bandwagon with him.
I don't know the reason for his drop. The only thing, he went from a 4-star to a 3-star. For those that aren't following this closely, he's one of the verbal commitments in the class of 2020. He's not 6'2". He's listed at 6'1", which means he's probably closer to 6 foot. But he was that same size when he was ranked a 4-star prior to last year. I watched his junior film. I am incredibly impressed with his accuracy. I mean, he can fit throws into a postage stamp, and I don't think that's changed. I don't know the reason for it. Right. I don't care the reason for it because I trust my eyes, you know, based upon what I see with him. I wouldn't be overly concerned about him being a 3-star. I don't know the reasons. I guess we can try to find out the reasons, but I don't think Notre Dame fans should be concerned about that.
I liked Pine more than Clark so much that I accidentally put it in Clark's write-up that it is not fair to him at all that I did it, but I see him in the middle right now of Dracovic and Pine. I don't know why they dropped, but you know what? Someone will be right in 3 years and someone will be wrong.
Right.
Andrew, but that's... Hey, accuracy, college game, it's a lot more important than those 2 inches.
Yeah, it's huge, and I think he's very accurate. You have another question there that kind of ties in with the...
At MConlin12, any cause for concern over the general drop in recruiting rankings given recent 24/7 developments? Is it a lack of attendance at camps given these athletes know where they will be going?
I'm not sure how many camps that they've attended at this point or this time of the year. You know, Michael Mayer is a great tight end. I think he might have been bumped up a little bit, even if he wasn't. He was already high. He's a great prospect.
Too. I believe he dropped too, but he stayed in the top 100.
Okay, but he's a great prospect.
He is.
Kevin Bauman dropping a little bit. I'm not surprised by that, but he's still, you know, it's still a great 1-2 punch for Notre Dame. Ahrensberger, again, I really don't care what anybody rates him at. He's from Germany, whatever. That kid's got a ton of ability and length, and he's going to play. I don't understand the Pine drop. You know, I think that there's a sense out there that it's a bias against Notre Dame, and I don't ever look at it that way. Is there a bias against Notre Dame when it comes to rankings? I can't account for every person that contributes to those rankings, but again, who cares? I really just do not care about that. Now, when I see a guy that I think is a 4-star and he's rated a 3-star, I'm going to say, well, I think that's a ridiculous rating, like I did with Kyle Hamilton and like I did with Braden McGregor and his ranking prior to 24/7 Sports bumping him up. But if you think it's a bias, I can't change your opinion about that. I don't think that has anything to do with
it. And you're right. I believe Mayer did get a bump up.
He did. That's a really, really great prospect. Going back to @TDISU19, tell us.
He reared double dip.
Yes, it is. It is. And we're going to wrap up with this question here. And it's, tell us about the time you were nervous to ask Brian Kelly a question because you were afraid of how he might respond. What was the result? Has any coach ever gotten to a verbal altercation with any of you?
The only time I considered not asking Kelly a question I asked was after he bit your head off at the Arizona State loss. And I asked the next question, and I literally
we weren't even associates yet.
No, we were not working.
Bailed me out.
Yeah, and I said, Coach, I know all the interceptions were Golson's fault. And boy, he's why weren't they his fault? He's like, well, you just said they weren't his fault. So I actually quoted him, and he's like, you're right, they weren't all his fault. So he took. I think he realized he was a little worked up. He even said to you, I'm worked up.
Yeah,
you're my guy right now that I'm going after or whatever. Kelly, you know the other. I think the one time I saw Kelly seething. Where I remember thinking, man, I just happen to agree with them. I don't know what to say here. Is the Florida State game. 2014, the flag.
Oh.
He was seething mad. And you kind of had to know professionally how to ask these questions.
Yeah.
Because he was just, rightfully so, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, so everyone in the room kind of
feels
that.
There's a picture of me with my in the touchdown yes. signal in the end zone.
I don't think you're supposed to do that.
I know, but somebody caught me. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, sometimes you can catch how a coach, sometimes professionally you should understand how the coach is going to respond to things. I know that I had a lot of respect for how former writer Andrew Owens asked a question after the Northwestern two-point conversion because he did the old professional move of lobbing a softball in.
Yeah.
And then asking about the two-point conversion. But when you get an answer, even though it's nonsensical, that is the answer. I don't think people get that. He said, that's what the chart says. No, it doesn't. No chart in the world tells you to go for two there. But that's, what are you going to sit there for 10 minutes and argue about what the chart he's holding says?
Right. Yeah. No chart says that.
A lot of people
want us to debate like we're a fan upset about the outcome. And that's not our responsibility.
We're not on a podcast with them.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, and I've been doing this 37 years, so has a coach gotten upset with you? Damn right they have. Just about every step of the way here at Notre Dame. The biggest concern for us, I think, is not that a coach is going to get upset. It's, are you fair and do you phrase it properly?
Right.
And a lot of times you're trying to come up with the wording and it doesn't come out quite the way you would like. For example, the Arizona State reference. When I use the word, and this is totally on me, when I use the word flat, which any coach would be upset when you use the word flat that you came out flat. My point was,
it was 34-3 for one.
Right, it wasn't just your quarterback; your entire team sucked. That was my point.
Also, would not have worked had you.
No, that wouldn't wouldn't have worked either. But I can go back if I could. Well, go ahead, Tim.
You need to go back and throw in a Tanuna story before you go back to the story you're about.
Well, you can go. Just go to YouTube and look up Tanuda. I don't know that you have to type my name in, but John Tanuda, Notre Dame. Most of the time when he was seething, it was because I asked a question and I never quite understood why it was me, other than I guess I just rubbed him wrong.
It was a weird setup too. He was kind of always, there was a seat for him, but he was always kind of standing and like casting this pose of
he was in the wrong frame of mind before any question was ever asked.
And it was always Wednesday practice. It's not like after the game. Only the head coaches have to be able to balance their emotions.
Yeah, well, I had a situation. Jerry Faust, once when I was working for Blue and Gold Illustrated, he threw a Blue and Gold Illustrated at me because he didn't like the letters to the editor. I had a situation with Tyrone Willingham where...
Ears just perked up all over the podcast.
Yeah, I had a situation with Tyrone Willingham where Jeff Samardzija, the recruit, was at Notre Dame for a practice. And I'd been trying to get a hold of Jeff Samardzija. So when I saw him, I thought, I've got to talk to Samardzija because I've been trying to get a hold of him. Well, when a recruit is on campus and you talk to him, it's a violation that the university has to, they have to inform the NCAA that this happened. My sole thought was, I got to talk to Samardzija. It wasn't... I just spaced it.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't, man, you know, I got to surreptitiously interview him and, you know, before Notre Dame sees me. Well, Tyrone Willingham thought I was trying to undermine and sabotage his program when he saw that I was talking to Samardzija. I tried to assure him that wasn't the case, but he never quite bought that.
You know who you didn't talk to during Willingham's practices?
Who's
a offensive line recruit that was on campus visiting.
Who's that?
Anyone. You didn't bring him in.
No,
you're safe.
And yes, Samardzija was definitely one of the best recruits that he ever brought in. And
should we relay the famous Dean Huppert story, the local broadcaster?
Go for it.
So we hear the story from Dean Huppert, who worked, he's now Mishawaka Public Schools, but he was with WSJV, News 28.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that wrong. I apologize if I did, but he was a longtime sports reporter here at local, had a lot of local responsibilities. And when Urban Meyer was an assistant coach at Notre Dame, part of the Friday night high school selections included picking the Notre Dame game at the end. So after picking Jimtown and Marion and Riley and St. Joe, he picked the team Notre Dame was playing against. Well, turns out one wide receiver coach at Notre Dame did not like that, because after Notre Dame won that game, Urban Meyer sought out
Dean Huppert.
Dean Huppert and said, "Take that, Huppert." That's how much Urban Meyer takes things personally.
Yeah, so we've all upset coaches. In fact, just a few weeks ago when I asked Boston College basketball coach Jim Christian about Notre Dame's short bench when they only played six players, he was like, "What about my short bench? What about my injuries?" And I didn't say this, but it was like, well, if there were any Boston media here, they could ask you about it. But I'm not Boston media, so I want to ask you about the six-man rotation. But he didn't care about Notre Dame's problems, and rightfully so, because Jim Christian has his own. So we'll wrap up with that. I want to thank our sponsors, the Black Tux and Warby Parker. This has been Irish Illustrated Insider. We will be back. Our schedule for next week right now, unless it changes, and I don't think it will, it'll be Monday. That's March 4th.
Because of practice is Saturday.
Yeah, practice is Saturday, so we'll have a podcast on Monday, and then we will have coordinators on Thursday. So our schedule next week will be Monday and Friday. Of course, we'll remind everybody that. But when Notre Dame is in session here this spring, and there'll be a week off, we'll be trying to hit two podcasts so we can take your questions and talk more Notre Dame football. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again on Monday.